and he had even promised a robe to a certain goddess in the temple if she would cure the child, although in usual times he did not believe in such things. But it was all useless, for the child would carry his burden until he died, and the only pleasure his father had out of it was that he had made the goddess go without her robe, since she would not do anything for him. As for Wang the Second, he had 5 children in all, and 3 were sons, the eldest and youngest being girls. But his wife was in her prime yet, and the line of his children was not ended either, doubtless, for she was so robust a woman she would bear on into her middle age. So it was true that out of all these children a son or 2 could be spared out of so many. And thus each man thought when he had meditated a while. At last Wang the Second looked up, and he said, "How shall I answer our brother?" The elder brother hesitated then, for he was not a man to decide anything quickly for himself, having leaned for so many years upon the decisions of his lady, and said what she told him to say. And this Wang the Second knew, and he said cunningly, "Shall I say we will send a son apiece, and I will send as much silver as I am able?" And Wang the eldest was glad to have it said thus, and he answered, "Yes, do so, my brother, and let us decide it. I will send a son gladly, after all, because my house seems so full sometimes with brats squalling and the big ones bickering that I do swear I have not a moment's peace. I will send my 2nd one and you your eldest, and then if anything untoward comes, there is my eldest son left to carry our name on." So it was decided, and the 2 drank tea for a while. Then when they were rested, they began to talk of the lands and of what they would sell. Now to both of these men, as they sat and whispered together, came a strong memory, and it was of a certain day when they had first spoken of selling the land, and their father Wang Lung was in his age, and they did not know he had strength enough to come creeping out after them to hear what they said, as they stood in a certain field near the earthen house. But he did come, and when he heard them say, "Sell the land," he had cried out in mighty anger, "Now, evil, idle sons, sell the land!" And he had been so angry he would have fallen if they had not held him up on either side, and he kept muttering over and over, "No, no, we will never sell the land." And to soothe him, for he was too aged to be so angry, they had promised him they would never sell it. Yet even as they promised, they smiled at each other over his nodding old head, foreseeing this very day when they would come together for this very purpose. Eager as they were, therefore, upon this day, to heap up money now, the memory was still strong in them of the old man and the land, so that they could not speak as easily of selling the land as they had thought they could, and each was held back in his own heart by some caution that perhaps the old man was right after all, and each resolved to himself that he would not at once sell all. No, hard times must come, and if business grew bad, they would still have enough land to feed themselves. For in such times as these, none could be sure what day a war might come near, or a robber chief seize the countryside for a time, or some great curse or other fall upon the people, and it was better to have something they could not lose. Yet they were both greedy after high interest from the silver that land will bring when it is sold, and so they were torn between their desires. Therefore, when Wang the Second said, "What lands of yours will you sell?" Wang the eldest replied with a caution that sat strangely upon him, "After all, I have not a business as you have, and there is nothing I can do except to be a landlord, and so I must not sell more than enough to bring me in ready cash to use, and I must not sell all." Then Wang the Second said, "Let us go out to our lands and see all we have and where it is and how it lies, the distant and scattered pieces also. For our old father was so greedy for land that in his middle years he would buy it anywhere when it was cheap in a famine year, and we have lands all over the countryside, and some fields but a few paces in size. If you are to be a landlord, it will be easier for you to have yours near together and so easy to control." This seemed good and reasonable to them both, and so they rose, after Wang the eldest had paid out his money for the food they had eaten and the wines, and something over and above for the serving man. They went out then, Wang the eldest first, and as they went, men rose here and there in the room to bow, and let it be known to all that they were acquainted with these 2 great men of the town. As for the 2 brothers, the eldest nodded freely and easily to all, and smiled, for he loved this homage. But the younger one went with his eyes downcast, and he nodded a little and very swiftly, and he looked at no one, as though he feared if he were too friendly one might stop him and draw him aside and ask to borrow money of him. So the two brothers went out to their land, and the younger one set his steps slow to match the pace of his elder brother, who was fat and heavy and unused to walking. At the city gate he was weary already, and so they hailed two men who stood there with donkeys saddled and for hire, and the brothers bestrode these beasts and went out the gate. That whole day did these two brothers spend upon their land, stopping at a wayside inn to eat at noon, and they went far and wide to every scattered field, and they eyed the land sharply and saw what the tenants did. And the tenants were humble before them and anxious, since these were their new landlords, and Wang the second marked every piece it was best to sell. All the lands that were their third brothers they so marked for sale, except the little that was about the earthen house. But with common accord, the two brothers did not go near that house, no, nor near to that high hillock under a great date tree where their father lay. At the end of the day they drew near again to the city upon their weary beasts, and at the gate they dismounted and paid the men the price they had agreed upon. The men were weary too, having run behind the beasts all day, and they begged for a little more than the price, having run so far and so long that their shoes were worn somewhat the worse. Wang the eldest would have given it, but Wang the second would not, and he said, "No, I have given you your just due, and it is not my business what happens to your shoes." And he walked away as he said it, and would pay no heed to the muttered curses of the men. So the two brothers came to their own house, and as they parted they looked at each other as men do who have a common purpose, and Wang the second said, "If you are willing, let us send our sons this day 7 days, and I will take them there myself." Wang the eldest nodded then, and walked wearily into his own gate, for he had never done such a day's work as this in his whole life, and he thought to himself that a landlord's life was very hard. Chapter 7. On the appointed day, therefore, Wang the second said to his elder brother, "If it be that your second son is ready, then mine is too, and I will take them tomorrow at dawn and go to that southern city where our brother is, and present them to him, and he may do as he likes with them." Then Wang the eldest, that same day when he was idle, called his second son to him, and he looked at the boy well to see what he was, and how he would be for the purpose for which he was destined. The lad came when he was called and stood before his father waiting. He was a lad small in stature, and very fragile and delicate in his looks, not beautiful either, and very timid and easily afraid, and his hands were always trembling and moist in the palms. He stood before his father now, twisting his trembling hands together without knowing he did, and his head hung down, but every now and again he looked up quickly and corner-wise at his father, and then hung his head down again. Wang the eldest stared at him a while, seeing him for the first time alone and out of his place among the other children, and he said suddenly, half-musing, "It would have been better if you had been the eldest, and the eldest in your place, for he is better framed than you are to be a general, and you look so weak I do not know whether you can stick on a horse or not." At this the lad fell suddenly to his knees, and he forked his quivering fingers together, and he implored his father, "Oh, my father, I do hate the very thought of being a soldier, and I thought I would be a scholar, for I love my books so. Oh, my father, let me stay home with you and my mother, and I will not even ask to go away to a school. No, I will read and study as best I can alone, and I will never trouble you for anything if you will not send me away to be a soldier." Now, although Wang the eldest would have sworn he had said nothing at all about this matter, still the thing had leaked out somehow, and the truth of it was that Wang the eldest could keep nothing to himself. He was such a man that without his knowing it, every time some thought came to him or he laid some secret plan, his very puffs and sighs and his half-sentences and his portentous looks betrayed him. He would have sworn he had told no one, but he had told his eldest son, and he had told his concubine in the night, and he had told his wife last, coming to her indeed, perforce, to have her approval. He put the matter so well to her, too, that the lady thought her son would step into being a general at once, and she was willing, although she felt, after all, it was no more than he was fit for as her son. But the eldest son, who was a clever lad, and knew more than anyone dreamed he did, because he had such a finicking, languid air, and he seemed to see nothing, had tormented his younger brother and had sneered at him and said, "You are to be made into a common soldier to follow that wild uncle of ours." Now this younger lad of Wang the Eldest's was indeed such a one that he could never even see a fowl killed without running somewhere to vomit, and he could scarcely bear to eat flesh at all, he had such a puny stomach. And when he heard his brother say this, he was beside himself with fear, and he did not know what to do. He could not believe it, and he was sleepless the whole night, and he could do nothing either, except to wait until he was called. And so he had thrown himself before his father to beg for mercy. But when Wang the Eldest saw his son kneeling and begging like this, he was angry, for he was a man who could be mulish and full of temper when he knew he had power, and he cried out, stamping his foot upon the tiled floor, "You shall go, for this is such a chance as we cannot refuse, and your cousin is going too, and you ought to be glad to go. When I was young, I would have rejoiced at such a chance, and it did not come. No, I was sent south to nothing at all, and even there I stayed but a little time because my mother died and my father bade me come home, and I never dreamed of disobeying him. I would not have dreamed of it. No, I had no such chance to grow great through an uncle's high position." And then Wang the Eldest sighed suddenly, because there came to him this thought, that if he had been given such a chance as this his son had, how great he could have grown by now, and how noble he would have looked in a soldier's gilded coat, and bestride a great high horse of war. For so he imagined generals did look. And he saw himself a great huge man, as a general ought to be. Then he sighed again, and he looked at this little wretched son of his, and he said, "I would have liked a better son than you to send, it is true. But I have not one old enough except you, and the eldest cannot leave home, for he is my chiefest heir and next to me in the family. And your younger brother is hunchback, and the next but a child. You must go, then, and all your weeping is no help to you either, for you must go." And he rose and went out of the room quickly, so that he need not be troubled any more by this son of his. But the son of Wang the Second was no such lad as this. He was a merry, boisterous boy, who had had smallpox when he was 3 years old from too strong a pox his mother had pushed into his nose with her thumb to make him safe against the disease, and he had kept his pox all his years, until now he was called by everyone Pox instead of his name, even by his own parents. When Wang the Second had called to him and said, "Get your clothes into a bundle, because tomorrow you go south with me, for I shall give you to your soldier uncle," he capered and ran about in glee, because he was one who was always ready to see what was new, and he loved to make a boast of what he had seen. But his mother looked up from a pot she stirred upon some coals in a little earthen stove there by the kitchen door, and since she had not heard of the thing before, she cried out in her loud way, "What do you spend good silver to go south for?" Wang the Second told her then, and she listened and stirred, but her eyes were fastened sharply meantime upon a maid who cleaned a fowl there, and she watched lest the maid take the liver or the unlaid egg secretly. And so she heard only the last of what her husband said, and it was this, "It will be a venture, and I do not know what he means by raising the lad up, but there are other sons to put into the business, and we have only this one old enough. Besides, my brother sends one." When his wife heard these last words, she brought her mind to the thing, and she said at once, "Well, and if their sons are to be raised to a high position, we must send ours, or else I shall be forever hearing my sister-in-law talk of her son who is a military hero. It is true this son of ours ought to be doing something, he is so big and so full of his clownish tricks, and as you say, we have the others for the shop." So Wang the Second the very next day took these two lads each with his garments, but the son of Wang the Eldest had his in a good pigskin box, and he was fastidious. Although his eyes were still red with weeping, and he delayed to see that his manservant carried it properly with the top uppermost, so that his books should not be all askew within. But the son of Wang the Second owned no book, and he had his few clothes tied into a large blue cotton kerchief, and he carried this himself, and he ran as he went and shouted aloud over everything he saw. It was a clear, bright day in spring, and the streets of the town were full of the first produce of the fields, and everyone was busy buying and selling. To this lad it was a good year, and a bright day, and he was setting forth on a journey which he had never done before, and his mother had cooked him a dish he loved to eat that morning, and so he was very merry. But the other lad walked along decorously and slowly and in silence, and he hung his head down, and he scarcely looked at his cousin, and from time to time he wet his pale lips as though they were very dry. Thus Wang the Second walked with the two lads, and he mused on his own affairs, for he was never one to pay heed to children. And so they came to the north of the town where the place was to mount the fire wagon, and Wang the Second paid money and they mounted. Then the son of Wang the eldest was put to much shame because his uncle had bought the cheapest places that could be bought, thinking it good enough for two lads, and so this youth found he must go into a carriage where very common people sat, who reeked of garlic, and their cotton clothes were unwashed and smelled of poverty, and here was he in his good blue silk gown, and he must sit among them. But he did not dare to complain, for he was afraid of his uncle's secret scorn. So he could only take his place and put his box between him and the common farmer fellow that sat next, and he looked piteously at his servant who must leave him now, but still he did not dare to say anything. But Wang the Second and his son looked little better than any, because Wang the Second had put on himself a cotton robe that morning when he rose, for it seemed to him he had better not look too fine before his third brother, lest he seem richer than he would seem. As for his son, he did not own a silk robe yet, and his stout cotton clothes were stitched by his mother, and cut full and loose and long for him to grow to fit. And Wang the Second looked at his nephew and said in his wry way, "It is ill to travel all day in such fine clothes as you wear. You had better take off that silk robe of yours and fold it and put it into your box, and sit in your undergarments, and so spare your best." The boy muttered then, "But I have better than this, and it is what I wear every day at home." Nevertheless, he did not dare to disobey, and so he rose and did what his uncle said. Thus they went all that day by land, and Wang the Second stared at the fields and the towns through which they passed, appraising all he saw, and his son cried out at every new thing, and he longed to taste the fresh cakes of every vendor when they stopped, only his father would not have it. But the other lad sat pale and timorous, and he was sick because the carriage went so fast, and he leaned his head upon his pigskin box and said nothing all day, and he shook his head even at food. Then they went by sea also 2 days in a small and crowded ship, and thus at last they came to the town where they must find the one they sought. And when they came out of the ship and were upon land again, Wang the Second hired rickshaws, and put the two lads into one, and he took one himself. The puller of the lads complained bitterly of his double burden, but Wang the Second explained to him they were but young lads, not men yet, and one of them pale and thin and less than usual because of his seasickness. And at last, by haggling and paying a little more, but not so much as another vehicle cost, the puller was somewhat willing. And the rickshaws came to the name of the house and street which Wang the Second gave them, and when they stopped, he drew the letter out of his bosom, and he compared the letters written over the gate with those in the letter, and they were the same. He came out of his rickshaw then, and he bade the two lads come out of theirs, and after he had haggled a while with the pullers, because the place was not so far as they had said, and he paid them a little less than the price agreed upon at first, he took the box at one end, and the two lads took it at the other end, and they started to walk through the great gate, on either side of which stood two stone lions. But there was a soldier standing there beside one of the lions, and he cried out, "What? Do you think you can come through this gate as you please?" And he took the gun off his shoulder and pounded its butt upon the stones, and he was so fierce and rude in his looks that the three stood dazed, and the son of Wang the eldest began to tremble, and even the pocked lad looked grave for a moment, because he had never stood so near a gun before. Then Wang the Second hastened to draw his brother's letter out of his bosom, and he gave it to the soldier to see, and he said, "We are the three mentioned here, and this is our proof." But the soldier could not read, and so he shouted for another soldier, and he came, and after he had stared a while at them and heard their whole tale, he took the letter. Yet he could not read either, and after he had looked at it, he took it inside somewhere. After a long time he came back, and he pointed inside with his thumb, and he said, "It is true enough, they are relatives of the captain, and they are to go in." So they picked up the box again, and they went in and passed the stone lions. although the man with the gun looked after them as though he were unwilling and very doubtful still. Nevertheless, they followed the other soldier, and he led them through 10 courts or so, every court filled with soldiers who idled there, some eating and some drinking, and some sitting naked in the sun to pick the vermin out of their clothes, and some lying asleep and snoring. And thus they went on to an inner house, and there in its central room sat Wang the Tiger. He sat there at the table waiting for them, and he wore good dark clothes of some rough foreign stuff, and they were fastened with buttons of brass upon which were stamped a sign. When he saw these relatives of his come in, he rose quickly and shouted to the soldiers who served him to bring wine and meats, and he bowed to his brother, and Wang the Second bowed also, and bade the two lads bow, and they all seated themselves according to rank, Wang the Second in the highest seat, and then Wang the Tiger, and the two lads in side seats below them. Then a serving man brought the wine and poured it out, and when this was done, Wang the Tiger looked at the lads, and he said in his sudden, harsh way, "That ruddy one looks stout enough, but I am not sure what wisdom he has behind that pocked face. He looks a clown. I hope he is not a clown, elder brother, because I do not like too much laughter. He is yours? I see a smack of his mother in him. As for the other one, is that the best my eldest brother can do?" When he said this, the pale lad hung his head deeper than ever, and it could be seen that a light chill sweat stood out on his upper lip, and he took his hand and wiped it furtively away, looking doggedly down all the time he did this. But Wang the Tiger continued to stare at them steadily with his hard, black stare, until even the pocked lad, who was always so ready, did not know where to look, so that he turned his eyes this way and that, and moved his feet and gnawed his fingernail. Then Wang the Second said in apology, "It is true they are but two poor things, my brother, and we are grieved that we had none more meat for your kindness, but my elder brother's eldest son is chiefest heir, and the one after this child is a hunchback, and this pocked one is my eldest, and my next but a child, and so these two are the best we have for the time." Then Wang the Tiger, having seen what they were, told a soldier to lead the lads into a side room and let them eat their meat there, and they were not to come again unless he called for them. The soldier led them away then, but the son of Wang the eldest cast piteous looks back at his uncle, and Wang the Tiger, seeing him waver like this, called, "Why do you linger?" Then the lad stopped and said in his feeble way, "But am I not to have my box?" Wang the Tiger looked then and saw the fine pigskin box beside the door, and he said with some measure of contempt, "Take it, but it will be no use to you, for you shall strip off those robes and get into the good stout clothes that soldiers wear. Men cannot fight in silk robes." The lad turned clay-colored at this and went without a word, and the two brothers were left alone. For a long time Wang the Tiger sat in silence, for he was never one to make talk for courtesy's sake, and at last Wang the Second asked him, "What is it of which you think so deeply? Is it something about our sons?" Then Wang the Tiger said slowly, "No, except I thought how that most men so old as I am have sons of their own growing up, and it must be a very comforting sight to a man." "Why, so might you have them if you had wed soon enough," said Wang the Second, smiling a little. "But we did not know where you were for so long, and my father did not know either, and he could not wed you as he would have. But my brother and I will do it willingly, and the money for it is there when you need it for such a thing." But Wang the Tiger put the thought from him resolutely, and he said, "No, it will seem strange to you, but I do not stomach a woman. It is a strange thing, but I have never seen a woman." And he broke off there, for the serving man came in with meats, and the brother said no more. When they had eaten and the dishes were taken away again and tea was brought, Wang the Second made ready to ask what thing it was that Wang the Tiger wished to do with all his silver and with these lads. But he did not know how to begin to ask it, and before he had decided on a skillful way, Wang the Tiger said suddenly, "We are brothers. You and I understand each other. I depend on you." And Wang the Second drank some tea, and then he said cautiously and mildly, "Depend upon me you may, since we are brothers. But I should like to know what your plan is, so that I can know what I am to do for you." Then Wang the Tiger leaned forward, and he said in a great whisper, and his words rushed out fast, and his breath was like a hot wind blowing into Wang the Second's ear, "I have loyal men about me, a good 100 and more, and they are all weary of this old general. I am weary, too, and I long for my own country, and I never want to see one of these little yellow southern men again. Yes, I have loyal men. At my sign, they will march out with me in the dead of a certain night. We will make for the north where the mountains are, and we will march to the far north before we entrench ourselves, to make a war of revolution if this old general comes after us. But he may not stir. He is so old and so sunken in his eating and drinking and his women, except that among my hundred are his best and strongest men, men not of the south, but out of fiercer, braver tribes. Now Wang II had always been a small and peaceful man, a merchant, and while he knew there was always a war somewhere, he had had nothing to do with wars, except once when in a revolution soldiers had been quartered in his father's house, and he knew nothing of how war is begun or waged, except that if it is waged too near, the prices of grain are high, and if it is distant, then prices fall again. He had never been so near a war as this. Even in his own family was this war. His narrow mouth gaped and his small eyes widened, and he whispered back, "But what can I do to help in this, who am so peaceful a man as I am?" "This," said Wang the Tiger, and his whisper was the grating of iron upon iron. "I must have much silver, all my own, and I must borrow of you, and at the least interest you will give me until I can establish myself." "But what security?" said Wang the Second, breathless. "This," said Wang the Tiger again. "You are to lend me what I need and what the land will bring, until I can gather a mighty army, and I will establish myself somewhere north of our own region, and I will make myself lord of that whole territory. Then, when I am lord, I will enlarge myself and my lands, and I shall grow greater and more great with every war I wage until—" He paused, and seemed to look off into some distant age, into some distant country, as though he saw it plain before him, and Wang the Second waited, and then could not wait. "Until what?" he said. Wang the Tiger rose suddenly to his feet. "Until there is none greater than I in this whole nation," he said. Now his whisper was like a shout. "What will you be, then?" asked Wang the Second, astounded. "I shall be what I will," cried Wang the Tiger, and his black brows flew up over his eyes suddenly and sharply, and he smote the table with the flat of his hand so that Wang the Second leaped at the crack, and the two men stared at each other. Now all this was the strangest thing of which Wang the Second had ever heard. He was not a man who could dream great dreams, and his greatest dream was to sit down at night with his books of accounts and look over what he had sold that year and plan in what safe, sure ways he could enlarge himself the next year in his markets. Now, therefore, he sat and stared at this brother of his, and he saw him tall and black and strange, and his eyes shining like a tiger's eyes, and those straight black brows like banners above his eyes. Thus staring, Wang the Second was lifted out of himself so that he was afraid of his brother, and he did not dare to say anything to thwart him, for there was a look in the man's eyes that was half crazed, and it was so mighty a look that even Wang the Second could feel in his pinched heart the power of this man, his brother. Still he was cautious, though, and still he could not forget his habit of caution, and so he coughed dryly and said in his little dry voice, "But what is there in all this for me, and for us all, and what security if I lend my silver to you?" And Wang the Tiger answered with majesty, and he brought his eyes back to rest upon his brother. "Do you think I will forget my own when I have raised myself up? And are not you my brothers, and your sons my brother's sons? Did you ever hear of a mighty lord of war who did not raise up all his house as he rose? Is it nothing to you to be the brother of a king?" And he gazed down into his brother's eyes, and Wang the Second suddenly half believed this brother of his, although unwillingly too, for all this was the strangest tale he had ever heard. And he said in his sensible way, "At least I will give you what is your own, and I will lend you what I can spare, if it be that indeed you can rise like this, for doubtless there are many who do not rise so high as they think they can. At least you shall have your own." Then some fire went suddenly out of Wang the Tiger's eyes, and he sat down and he pressed his lips together straight and hard, and he said, You are cautious, I see. His voice was so hard and cold that Wang the Second was a little afraid, and he said to excuse himself, But I have a family, and many little children, and the mother of my sons is not old yet, and she is exceedingly fertile, and I have all these to plan and care for. You are unwed yet, and you do not know what it is to have so many depending on you for everything, and food and clothing costing more every year. Wang the Tiger shrugged himself, and he turned away, and he said as if carelessly, I do not, indeed, but hear me. Every month I will send my trusty man to you, and you will know him by his hair lip. You are to give him as much money as he is able to carry. Sell my lands as quickly and as well as you are able, for I shall need 1,000 pieces of silver a month.
1,000?
Cried Wang the Second, and his voice was cracked and his eyes idiotic in his surprise. But how can you spend it? There are 100 men to be fed and clothes and arms to be bought. I must buy guns before I can increase my army if I cannot capture them quickly enough, said Wang the Tiger, speaking very fast. Then suddenly he was angry.
You are not to ask me this and that, he roared, smiting the table again. I know what I must do, and I must have silver until I can establish myself and be lord over a territory. Then I can tax the people as I will, but now I must have silver. Stand by me, and you shall have a certain reward. Fail me, and I can forget you are my blood.
When he said these last words, he thrust his face very near to his brother's, and Wang the Second, looking into those fierce eyes, hooded beneath the heavy black brows, drew back hastily and coughed and said,
Well, and of course I will do it. I am your brother. But when will you begin?
When can you sell my parcel of land? Asked Wang the Tiger.
The wheat harvest will come before many months, said Wang the Second slowly, musing as he spoke and hesitating, for he was dazed with all he had heard.
Then men will have money, returned Wang the Tiger, and you can sell something before rice is put in, doubtless.
Now this was true enough, and Wang the Second did not dare to oppose this strange brother of his at all, for he was afraid of him, and he knew he must manage the thing somehow. So he rose and said,
If there is such haste as this, I must return at once and see what I can do, for harvests are quickly spent, and then men think themselves poor again and hard worked with what land they have to plant, and more land will seem too much for them.
So he would not stay at all, for he wanted to be away out of this place, where there were such fierce men and guns and weapons of war everywhere. He stayed only to go into the next room where the lads had been sent, and they were sitting on a bench before a small, unpainted table, upon which food was placed. It was the broken meats of what Wang the Tiger had put before his brother, but it was good enough for these lads, and Wang the Second's son stuffed it into his mouth very willingly, his bowl to his lips. But the other lad was dainty and accustomed to better than what was left over after others had eaten, and he sat and picked a little rice up with his chopsticks and did not touch the meats. Then Wang the Second felt some strange unwillingness to leave these lads, and especially his own, and he had a doubt for a moment as to whether it was not a hazard he should not have taken for his son. But the thing was begun now, and he could not undo what was begun. So he merely said,
I return, and my only command on you both is that you are to obey your uncle in every single point, for you are his now, and he is a fierce and impatient man, and he will not bear anything from you. But if you are obedient and will do all he says, you may rise to what you do not know. There is some destiny written for your uncle.
Then he turned quickly and went away, for he could not help it that his heart was a little heavy to leave his son, more than he could have thought it would be. And to ease it, he muttered to himself,
Well, such a chance does not come to every lad, and if it is chance, it is a fair one. He will not be a common soldier after all, but an official of some sort if the thing succeeds.
And he determined he would do well and do all he could to make it succeed. At least for his son's sake, he would do all he could. But the pale lad who was Wang the eldest son began to weep when he saw his uncle go, and he wept aloud. And Wang the Second hurried away. Yet the sound of that weeping pursued him, and he made haste to reach the gate where the lions were, so that he could hear it no more. Chapter 8 Now began this strange enterprise, which, if Wang Lung's soul had not been in some far country, could have made his body rise out of that land of his where he slept, because in his lifetime he had hated above anything else war and soldiers. And here was his good land being sold for such a cause. But he slept there, and he slept on, and there was no one to stay these sons of his in what they did. No, there was no one except Pear Blossom, and she did not for a long time know what they did. These two elder sons feared her for her faithfulness to their father, and so they hid their plans from her. For when Wong the Second had come back to his house, he told Wong the Eldest to come to the tea house, where they could talk in peace, and there over their bowls of tea they talked. But this time Wong the Second chose a secret hidden corner, where two walls came together without any window or door in either wall, and they sat so they could see who came near, and they bent their heads over the table and talked in whispers and hints and broken words. Thus Wong the Second told his brother what Wong the Tiger planned, and whereas now he was come back to his own house again, and into the common ways of his usual life, the plan of the soldier had seemed more and more a dream, and an impossible dream. The eldest brother seized on it as he listened as a thing wonderful but easy to do, too. The truth was that this huge and childlike man grew excited as the plan unfolded before him, for he saw himself raised above his highest fancy, brother to a king. He was a man of little learning and less wisdom, and besides one who loved to see plays, and he had seen many old plays which tell of the deeds of ancient and fabled heroes, who were at first but common men, and then by the skill of their arms and by their wit and guile, they rose high enough to found dynasties. Now he saw himself the brother of such an one, and more than that, the elder brother of such an one. And his eyes listened, and he whispered hoarsely, "I always said our brother was like no other lad. It was I who besought our father to take him out of the fields and hire a tutor for him and teach him what he ought to know as a landlord's son. Doubtless my brother will not forget what his eldest brother did for him, and how, if it had not been for me, he would have been but a hind on my father's land." And he looked down, pleased with himself, and he smoothed over his great belly the rich purple satin robe he wore. And he thought of his second son, and how the family would all rise, and he himself would perhaps be a nobleman. Doubtless he would be made a nobleman when his brother was a king. There were stories of such things in the books he had read, and he had seen these things in the playhouse. Then Wong the Second, who had been more and more dubious as he came back to himself, and indeed the fierce enterprise seemed very far from this quiet town, when he saw the mind of his elder brother flying into the future, he grew jealous, and his caution made him greedy, and he thought to himself, "I must be careful, lest haply there is a little in what my younger brother dreams, and lest perhaps he does even succeed in a tenth part of what he dreams. I must be ready to share his success with him, and I must not draw back too far." And he said aloud, "Well, but I have to furnish him the silver, and without me he could do nothing. He must have what he needs until he can establish himself, and how I am to get so much I do not know. After all, I am but a little rich man, and scarcely counted rich by those who are lords of wealth. The first few months I can get it by selling his land, and then we can sell some land, you and I. But what shall we do if he is not established by that time?"
"I will help him, I will help him," said the elder brother hastily, and he could not at this moment bear to think that anyone should do more for this younger brother than he did. The two men rose then in the haste of their common greed, and Wong the Second said, "Let us go out to the lands once more, and this time we will sell."
Now this time also, when the two brothers went out to the land, they remembered Pear Blossom, and they did not go near that earthen house. No, they bestrode two donkeys that stood among many at the city gate to be hired by their masters, and thus they went out along the narrow paths between the fields. And the donkey keepers, who were young lads, ran after them and beat the donkeys upon the thighs and shrieked at them to urge them on. And they went to the north and away from that house and that bit of land. The beast that Wong the Second rode went willingly enough, but the other swayed upon its delicate feet beneath the mighty weight of Wong the Eldest, for this man grew fatter every month, and it was plain that in another 10 years or so he would be a marvel in the town and the countryside, seeing that now, when he was but turned his 45th year, he was so round and full about his middle and his cheeks hanging and thick as haunches. so they must wait a while for the burdened beast. But still they went well enough, and in that one day they visited all the tenants which were on the lands that had been marked before for sale. And Wang the Second inquired of every man if he would buy the land he worked, and if he would, then when, and how soon he would pay for it. Now it so happened that it had been decided, since Wang the Tiger wished for silver, that they would give him the largest single piece of land, and it was the farthest from the town and tilled now under one farmer, a prosperous, good man, who had begun humbly enough as a laborer upon Wang Lung's own land, and he had married a slave out of the townhouse, a strong, honest, noisy woman, who worked hard while she bore her children, and she drove her husband to work harder too than he would have left alone. They had prospered, and each year they rented more of Wang Lung's land until they had a number of acres under them, and they had to hire men to help with the labor of it. But still, they themselves worked, for they were a saving, thrifty pair. To this man the two brothers came this day, and Wang the eldest asked him, saying, "We have more land than we wish, and we need silver to venture in other affairs, and if you want to buy these pieces you till, well enough, and we will sell them to you." Then the farmer's round, ox-like eyes opened, and he let his mouth go agape under the shelf of his teeth, and he said, his voice hissing and spitting against his teeth when he spoke, for so his way was, and he could not help it,
"I did not dream your house was ready to sell its land already, thing how fath into the land the old man your father was."
Then Wang the eldest drew down his thick mouth, and he looked very grave, and he said,
"For all his love of it, he has left us a very heavy burden to bear. We have his two concubines to care for, and neither of them is our mother, and the elder one loves her good wines and her fine foods, and she must have her gaming every day, and she is not clever enough to win at it every day either. Money from the lands comes in slowly, and it is dependent upon the whims of heaven, and such a house as we have must spend money generously, for it would be unseemly of us and unworthy of us as our father's sons if we let our family look poor and mean and poorer than when he was alive. So we must take some of the land for our livelihood." But Wang the Second had fidgeted and coughed and frowned while his brother made this ponderous speech, and it seemed to him his brother was little better than a fool, for if it is seen that one is eager to sell his goods, the price goes down. He made haste to say now in his turn,
"But there are many who inquire after our land to buy it, because it is well known in these parts that the lands our father bought are good and the best in this countryside. If you do not want the land you hire, then let us know quickly, for there are others who wait for it."
Now this shelf-toothed farmer loved the land he tilled, and he knew at every foot and how each bit lay, how that field sloped and how this one must be ditched if he was to secure the harvest. Much good manure had he put into the land, too, not only the excrements of his own beasts and of his household, but he had labored and gone into the town and carried out for this long-distance buckets of the town's waste. He had risen often and early in the morning to do this. Now he thought of all those stinking loads he had carried, and of all his labor gone into these fields, and it seemed to him an ill thing indeed, if now it were all to pass to another man. So he said, hesitating,
"Well, I had not thought of owning the land myself yet. I thought in my thumb time, perhaps it might be ready to sell. But if it is to be sold now, I will think what I can do, and I will tell you tomorrow when I have thought of it. But what is your price?"
The two brothers looked at each other then, and Wang the Second said quickly before the elder brother could speak, for he feared that one would say too little,
"The price is just and fair. 50 pieces of silver for a field of the size of the sixth of an acre."
Now this was a high price, and too much for land so far from town as this, and it was more than could be paid for it, and they all knew this, but still it was a start to the bargain. Then the farmer said,
"Such a price I cannot pay, poor as I am, but I will tell you tomorrow when I have thought."
Then Wang the eldest grew too anxious for the money, and he said,
"A little more or less will not spoil the bargain."
But Wang the Second cast him an angry look, and he plucked his brother by the sleeve, lest he say more foolishness yet, and he led him to go away again. But the farmer called after them,
"I will come tomorrow, when I have thought."
This he said, although what he meant was that he must talk with his wife. But it would seem very small in a man if he said he held what his wife thought to be of any account, and so he put it thus to save his own pride. When the next day came after he had talked with his wife in the night, he went to the town where the two brothers lived, and there he bickered and bargained with them, and he bargained as once Wang Lung had in that very house for the land that house owned, a house now scattered and dispersed, of which only these bricks and stones were left. But a price was agreed upon at last, a third less than Wang the second had said, and this was fair enough, and the farmer was willing, because it was a price his wife had mentioned he might take, if so be he could get the land for no less. When the land was thus sold, the farmer said, "How will you have the purthith money, in silver or in grain?" And Wang the second said quickly, "Half in silver and the rest in grain." This he said, thinking if he took the grain he could sell it a time or two, and turn a little extra silver on it, and it would not be robbing his brother either, since it was no one's affair save his own if the grain were turned a time or two, and the profit was due him for all this labor. But the farmer said, "I cannot muster so much silver. I will give you a third in silver and a third in grain now, and the last third, I promise, from next year's harvest." Then Wang the elder rolled his eyes in his lordly way, and he stamped his foot and shifted his chair where he sat with them in the great hall, and he said, "But how can you tell what the skies will be next year, and what rains will come, and how will we know what we are to have?" But the farmer stood there very humble before these rich townsmen, who were his landlords, and he sucked his teeth before he spoke, and then he said patiently, "We on the land are at the mercy of heaven always, and if you cannot bear the risk, you must take the land again as the curate." So it was settled at last, and on the third day the farmer brought the silver, not all at once, but in three times, each time with a roll of it wrapped in a blue cloth and hidden in his bosom. Each time he took the silver out slowly, and his face drew together as though he were in some pain, and he put the silver down on the table, hardly, as though he did it with sorrow, and so he did. For into the silver had gone so many years of his life, so many pounds of his flesh, so much of the strength of his sinew. He had collected from every place where he had hid his little stores of grain, and he had borrowed all he could, and he could not even have had this except by bitter, frugal living. But the two brothers saw only the silver, and when they had set their seal upon the receipt of it, and the farmer had sighed and gone away, Wang the eldest cried with contempt, "Well, and the farming folk always cry out and make such an ado because they live so hard and have so little. But any of us would be willing to gain silver like this man has been able to do, and it has not been hard for him, I dare say. If they can heap it up like this from the land, I swear I shall press harder upon my tenants after this." And he pushed back his long silken sleeves and smoothed his soft, pale hands, and he took up the silver and let it slip through his fat fingers that were dimpled at the knuckles, as a woman's are. But Wang the second took up the money, and Wang the eldest watched him unwillingly as he did it, and Wang the second counted it swiftly and skillfully into tens once more, although it had been well counted already. Into tens he counted it all, and wrapped it up neatly as clerks do in some sheets of paper he had. Wang the eldest stared at it unwilling to see it go, and at last he said longingly, "Need we send it all to him?"
"We must send it," said Wang the second, coldly, seeing his brother's greed. "We must send it now, or his venture fails, and I must take the grain and sell it, and be ready for the day when his trusty man comes."
But he did not tell his brother he would turn the grain over a time or two, and Wang the eldest did not know these tricks a merchant has, and so he could only sit and sigh to see the silver go away. When his brother was gone, he sat on a while, feeling melancholy and poor, as though he had been robbed. Now Pear Blossom might never have heard of all this that went on, for Wang the second was cunning beyond all, and he never hinted of anything he did, no, not even when at the proper time he took to her the allowance of silver that was hers. 25 pieces he took to her every month, as Wang the tiger had said he must, and the first time he did it, she said in her soft voice, "But where does this 5 come from? For I know only 20 was given to me, and I do not need even so much, only for this poor child of my lord's. But this 5 I have not heard of."
To this Wang the Second replied, "Take it, for my younger brother said you were to have it, and it comes from his share."
But when Pear Blossom heard this, she counted out 5 pieces with all speed, her small hands trembling. And she pushed the money to one side as though she feared it might burn her, and she said,
"I will not have it, no, I will have nothing except my due."
At first, Wang the Second had thought he would press her, but then he remembered what a risk he ran when he loaned money for this venture of his brother's, and he remembered all the trouble he had for which he received no pay, and he remembered all the possibility there was that the venture might fail. When he thought of all this, he scraped up the silver she had set aside, and he put it carefully into the bosom of his robe, and he said in his small, quiet voice,
"Well, it may be better so. Since the other and the elder has as much, and it is true you should have a little less, I will tell my brother."
But seeing what her temper was, he forbore to say the very house she lived in belonged to that third son, for it suited them all to have her live there with the fool. He went away then, and he never said more to Pear Blossom than this, and except for such casual meetings for some purpose or other, Pear Blossom did not see the family in the great townhouse. Sometimes, it is true, she saw Wang the eldest pass at the turn of the season, in the spring when he came out to measure the seed for his tenants as a landlord must, although he did but stand by very high and important, while some agent he had hired measured it. Or he came out sometimes before the harvest to appraise what the fields had, so that he could know whether or not his tenants lied to him when they cried out as they always did of this and that, and what a bad year it had been for them, and how much or how little it had rained. So he came and went a few times a year, and each time he was sweating and hot and ill-tempered with his labor, and he grunted his greeting to Pear Blossom if he saw her, and although she bowed decorously if she saw him, she did not speak if she could help it, because he grew such a great blowsy man, and he had a way of leering his eyes secretly at women. Nevertheless, seeing him come and go, she supposed that the land was as it had always been, and that Wang the Second saw to his lands and the third brother's, and no one thought to tell her anything. She was not indeed one with whom it was easy to gossip, because she was still and distant in her manner to all except children, so that although she was gentle, yet there was that about her that made people fear her too. She had no friends at all, except that of late she had acquainted herself with some nuns who lived in a nunnery not far away, a quiet house built of gray bricks and set behind a green willow hedge. These nuns she received gladly when they came to teach her their patient doctrines, and she listened to them and brooded upon them after the nuns were gone, for she longed to learn enough to pray for Wang Lung's soul. So might she never have known about the selling of the land, except that in that very year when the farmer had bought the first parcel of land, the little hunchbacked son of Wang the eldest followed his father at a distance, so that the man did not know it, when he came out to the harvest fields. Now this lad was the strangest little lad, and he was not like any of the children in the courts of the great house. His mother had disliked him from the hour he was born for some reason that none knew, perhaps because he was less ruddy and good to see than her other children, or perhaps because she was weary then of childbearing, and weary of him before he was born. But because of her dislike she had given him at once to a slave to suckle, and this slave did not love him either, because they had taken her child away from her for his sake, and she said he had an eye too wise for his age, that looked evil in his baby face. She said he was full of malice, too, and that he bit her willfully when he suckled. And once she screeched as she held him to her breast, and she dropped him upon the tiles of the court where she sat under a shade tree with him. And when they came to see what was amiss, she said he had bit her until she bled, and she held her breast out for them to see, and it was true it did bleed. From that time on this lad grew hunched, and it was as though all his strength of growing went into this great knot he carried on his shoulders. And everyone named him Hunchback, and by that name did even his parents call him. Seeing what a poor thing he was, and that there were other sons, there was no trouble taken over him, and he did not have to learn his letters or do anything at all. And he learned early to stay out of men's sight, especially out of the sight of other children, who mocked him cruelly for the burden he bore. He prowled about the streets, or he walked far out in the countryside alone, limping as he walked, and carrying that great load of his upon his back. On this harvest day he had followed his father unseen, and he kept out of his father's sight. for well he knew his father's ill temper on such days as he must go to his land, and he followed him out as far as the earthen house. But Wang the eldest passed on to his fields, and the hunchback stayed to see who it was that sat at the door of the house. Now it was only Wang Lung's poor fool, and she sat there in the sun as she always did. But she was a woman grown in body now, and more than that, for she was nearly 40 years old, and there were white streaks in her hair. But she was still the same poor child, and she sat there grimacing and folding her bit of cloth, and the hunchback wondered at her, for he had never seen her before. And in his malicious way he began to mock her, and make grimaces too, and he snapped his fingers so loudly under her nose that the poor thing shrieked in fear. Then Pear Blossom came running out to see what went wrong, and when the lad saw her, he ran limping and hobbling into the pointed shadows of the bamboo grove, and from there he peered out like a little savage beast. But Pear Blossom saw who it was, and she smiled her gentle, sad smile, and she drew out of her bosom a small, sweet cake, for she carried such cakes with her to coax the fool sometimes when she grew stubborn suddenly from some strange caprice and was unwilling to obey. This cake she held out to the hunchback, and he stared at her first, and at last he crept out and seized the cake and stuffed it all into his mouth at once. Then, enticing the child, she got him to come and sit beside her upon a bench at the door. And when she saw how this poor lad sat himself down all askew, and how small and weary his face looked under the great burden on his back, and his eyes so deep and sorrowful she did not know whether he was man or child, except he was so small, she reached out her arm and she laid it about his crooked body, and she said in her pitying soft way, "Tell me, little brother, if you are the son of my lord's son or not, for I have heard he had one like you." Then the child shook her arm off suddenly and nodded, and made as if he would go away again. But she coaxed him and gave him another cake, and she smiled at him and said, "I do believe you have a look about your mouth like my dear lord's, and he lies now under that date tree there. I miss him so sorely that I wish you would come here often, because you have some look of his." This was the very first time that anyone had ever said such a thing to the hunchback before, to wish him there, for he was used, even though he was a rich man's son, to have his brothers push him aside, and to have the very servants careless of him and serve him last, because they knew his mother did not care for him. Now he stared at her piteously, and his lips began to quiver, and suddenly he wept, although he did not know why he did, and he cried out in his weeping, "I wish you would not make me weep, so I do not know why I weep so." Then Pear Blossom soothed him with her arm about that knotty back of his, and although he could not have said so, the lad felt it was the sweetest touch he had ever had upon him, and he was soothed without knowing why or how he was. But Pear Blossom did not pity him too long. No, she looked at him as though his back were straight and strong as other lads are, and after this day the hunchback came often to the earthen house, for no one cared where he went or what he did. Day after day he came, until his very soul was knit to Pear Blossom. She was skillful with him, too, and she made as though she leaned on him and needed his help to care for the fool. And since no one had ever looked to the lad for help of any sort before, he grew quiet and gentle, and much of his evil spirit went out of him as the months went on. If it had not been for this lad, then, Pear Blossom might never have known how the land was being sold away. Nor did the lad know he told her, for he talked to her of everything as it came into his mind, and he prattled of this and that, and he said one day, "I have a brother who will be a great soldier. Some day my uncle is going to be a great general, and my brother is with him learning how to be a soldier. My uncle is to be a very king some day, and then my brother will be his chief captain, for I heard my mother telling it so." Pear Blossom was sitting on the bench by the door when the lad said this, and she looked away over the fields, and she said in her quiet voice, "Is your uncle so great, then?" She paused a while, and then she said again, "But I wish he were not a soldier, because it is so cruel a thing to be." But the lad cried, boasting a little, "Yes, he is to be the greatest general, and I think a soldier, if he is a brave, good hero, is the most magical thing a man can be, and we are all to be great with him. Every month my father and my second uncle send my soldier uncle silver against the time he will be great,